Hey girl, welcome back to the Say Grace podcast. I'm registered dietitian and weight loss expert, Constance Shelby. I've helped thousands of women eat the foods they love while losing weight. I'm here to talk all things weight loss and women because you know it's never just about the food. So whether you're praying before a healthy home-cooked meal or driving the struggle bus right on through that drive-thru, sit with me and let's say grace. This two-part podcast, I have my husband Jess with me to talk about a rare and minimally understood allergy that consumed our family 7 years ago. Our oldest daughter, Sarah Mason, was diagnosed with F. pies at only 6 months old. I have Jess with me today to discuss our F. pies experience, what it is, and the signs that we saw. On the next episode, we're going to share our testimony on how God worked in our lives during this time and changed the path of our future through such a dark season. Hey, Jess.
Hey, Constance.
So I've been saying that we were going to do this podcast, really just because it's such a rarely talked about topic. Like, I mean, we had never heard of F. pies before we had a child with F. pies. And I just noticed after Sarah Mason had it and after we talked about it incessantly on the internet and with whoever else, so many people approached me with like friends or family or questions about F. pies. And so I kind of feel like an advocate. I mean, do you feel that way?
Or you kind of became like an expert sort of in F. pies for like people who had never heard of it.
Right.
So like, I know when we went to our pediatrician and we started walking down that road, it was like all of a sudden, every time that came up in like a visit that he had with a different patient, if they needed somebody to talk to, he would like call you.
Right. And refer. So yeah, crazy thing, like our pediatrician, who's like an amazing pediatrician around here, we were his first F. pies patient, like officially diagnosed F. pies child. And then it was like crazy because he just kept getting them after that. And so, I think more than anything, like, yeah, I had the knowledge just from the experience, which we'll talk about here in a minute, but also just like, he knew that I could be that emotional support for those parents. So we're going to talk about it because it is, again, not talked about. No one knows. And then I hate for anybody to feel the way we felt, especially in those first weeks of waiting and not knowing and just kind of feeling scared to death to feed our child. Okay, so what is F. pies? F. pies is, so it stands for food protein induced enterocolitis syndrome. Okay, and so what it is just a delayed gut reaction to foods. It can be any food, but it is commonly foods like cow's milk, soy, rice, oats. But you know, just to like put the extra fear factor on top of it, it can be like random things too, like peaches or like, I mean, like just anything that you would think would be safe, it can be an F. pies trigger food. So it presents itself differently, which I think may give it less respect to like the general population, because so I know that we struggled with this with people who just didn't understand.
Yep.
It does not present in a way where you like break out and get hives or your throat closes up or you've got rashes or whatever. Like, it doesn't present the way an IgE allergy presents. With an IgE allergy, like the immune system produces antibodies in response to an allergen. And then if too much is produced, that's where you see that reaction happen on the body and the throat and the thing. Everything responds. And I do think IgE also delivers stomach reactions as well. But you can, with an IgE reaction, you can see it on their body.
Pretty quickly,
immediately. Yeah. I mean, that's why they carry EpiPens. And so IgE is like the typical allergy you hear about food. So I'm sure anybody listen knows somebody with like a peanut allergy or a egg allergy or a milk allergy. And so you can see that on their skin. And that is life threatening, you know, that you, for a lot of people, they need that EpiPen to make the body chill out and calm down. So with FPIs, it's not immediate. It is its own form of absolute hell. I mean, honestly, tell me I'm wrong.
Like, no, you're right.
It is
uncertain hell.
Uncertain hell.
You don't know what's going on.
Because you can have the reaction up to 2 to 6 hours after you eat the food. So, in fact, you're not going to see it immediately. I mean, I don't know anybody that has had FPIs children that have seen it immediately. So it's 2 to 6 hours. So it presents like by the time you've forgotten basically what you've eaten, you know what I mean?
Yeah. Or moved on to your next meal.
Right. And so then you're like, what is this, a stomach bug? Is this a, you know, food poison?
Or is it IgE to something I just ate?
Right.
Because you're on to your past your second meal 2 to 4 or 2 to 6 hours later.
So to make matters even more complicated, it also does not usually present, for some it does, but it does not present after the first time you've tried that food. It can present the second, third, fourth, fifth, up to like the 15th time you've tried that food. That's when your gut finally decides, okay, I don't like this food. And so this is what happens. So once you have the reaction 2 to 6 hours after you've eaten it, you know, 1 to 15 times after you've had it or whatever, your body kind of goes into like a gastro shock. So it is consistent vomiting, diarrhea, dehydration, you know, lethargy, obviously. It is a full on, it looks like probably the worst stomach bug you've ever had. And it's often treated that way. And so it's scary, though, because FPIs is only, to my knowledge, prevalent in children. Most children grow out of it by, I think, age 3. But it, actually, it's ages 2 to 3, and we'll never know by what age Sarah Mason grew out of it because we just... We held every precaution, and this child to this day still doesn't eat her trigger foods much. And so, it's a little body. Like, it's a small, tiny body. It's a small, tiny stomach. And so anybody who's ever had an infant or a toddler with a stomach bug knows that, like, they get dehydrated, they can pass out, they can be so exhausted, and then they also don't talk. Yeah. So they can't tell you what's wrong. And so it is a hospital warranted situation very often because it is very scary. So I think I just, you know, that's kind of our intro on it. And so what we're going to do is talk about how this hit us, like how this hit our family, just kind of our personal experience. I think in hindsight, there are things that we now look back on and say, oh, okay, maybe that was a sign, you know, but and then also how in the next episode, we will talk about how like one of our biggest nightmares as young parents was actually like such a huge blessing to us. In hindsight, you know, to our family. And so, for here and now, we're going to talk about how it was. So, okay. Let's just start from the beginning. Jess, talk about, so we got pregnant with Sarah Mason.
Can I start by saying, I'm glad you didn't ask me to explain all that.
Oh, well, yeah. It is, you know, it is one of those things though, where FPIs is so little understood. Like,
yep.
No one really understands it. Even like when we were going to the doctors and seeing the allergist, half the people had not heard of it. And then we finally found an allergist who had heard of it. And he was a genius. But he really was kind of like, you just have to try and see. You know, yeah. There's no rules to it. Except he did give us one or two rules, which we'll talk about later. Yeah.
But. And he was kind of even uncertain if we had it at first because he was, it's so rare. Like,
yes.
He had been practicing for so long and was like, I've seen
a handful.
A handful.
Yes. which in itself is insane. Because if you, so I check in on the research like every so often, just out of, but especially when people to this day still reach out to me. And that was 7 years ago that,
yep,
over 7 years ago that we went through this. And so I like to check in and kind of see, and there is a little bit more there now, but it's not much more than what we had. But I do think it's becoming maybe a more spoken about diagnosis. And I think it is because they're seeing it more often, which gets my brain so interested in like, what has happened in the past 20 years that has made this random gut allergy come to the surface that, you know, literally 20 years ago, no doctor would have named it. I mean, yep. I think it got its name not very long, you know, ago. And so that to me is so interesting as a dietitian. I like to geek out there, but, but, you know, and even still as a dietitian, it was maddening to me. And you will remember this. Like, I was extremely frustrated that I had every resource there was to have at my fingertips about anything related to food. Y'all, I had learned all the things about all the food allergies in school. I mean, I had learned and I had access to all the research. There was none. Like, yep, there was none. And so we'll talk about that here in a little while, though, kind of my workaround for that. But okay, backing up, we are new parents to Sarah Mason. Y'all,
we were the best.
We were the best. But no one talks about just like the cluelessness, and like maybe everybody else knows more than we do. But like, we brought her home, and we were just like. And like, just had, we both had nieces and nephews by then. Like, we thought we were, you know,
ready.
Like, we thought we were cut out to be parents. And so, man, but that sleep deprivation and that, the noise of that cry from a baby can like make you lose it.
Oh yeah.
And not to mention, I had a C-section with Sarah Mason. And so I was pretty, it was tough for me to get around. I've talked about this before on the podcast, but like, I had gained a lot of weight in my pregnancy with Sarah Mason. And so that like combined with the section soreness, I my whole body was just a struggle. And then trying to figure out at 3 a.m., like, what do we do with this thing? Do I nurse it? Do you give it a bottle? Do you walk it around the house? Like, what do you do? You know, like, where does it sleep? Like, we just were clueless.
If you've seen pictures of Sarah Mason as like a 6 month old, you know the answer to that. We just fed her to shut her up.
We just fed her to put her to sleep. She was born and she was actually, I had to have a section as we call it a scheduled section, yeah, but it was kind of like a last minute, you know, set up, because we went in for our ultrasound and she had stopped growing. And so it could have been a million different things. It turned out to be nothing. She was just a small baby, but that set us up for like, she came out in the sixth percentile for her age. And like, it set me up. I was on a mission. I was like, we're going to feed her until she was thriving. And baby, we did. I mean,
she got to the 106 percentile at some point.
So she was a fed baby, but I give that like kind of foundation there, because I feel when I look back that like there were some things that we just could have probably picked up on that like we just didn't know any different because she was our first. And I could be wrong, but like, so here's an example. Like, we did not know what a baby diaper should really look like. Still, you know,
still don't.
Still, I mean, yes, we do. I do. Yeah, my sister's like, Constance, look at this diaper. Is it normal?
I know. That's what I mean.
You know, like we know now, because I mean, my gosh, y'all, I Googled baby poop pictures, but I still didn't really know. Like, and so there were times, like one of the signs of FPIES in a child is like consistently like mucus diapers. And there were times, I know, it's gross, but welcome. Welcome to the Say Grace podcast. And so there were times that I was just kind of like, is this right? Or maybe she just, you know, had some funky baby food. Or like, I don't know. You know, there were times that I just didn't. What was I going to do?
Yeah.
When I, you know, so that was something. Also, Sarah Mason had eczema. Do you remember this? She had little rash all over her, like random spots of her body from the time like, yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, but also my family is high allergy. Like my dad has bad allergies. My sister had eczema and asthma. Like I have sinus allergies really bad. I'm allergic to cats. Like we had, my mom has like, my mom growing up had like some random food allergies. And then, you know, she has, what is it? Ragweed allergy. Like, so we just all have allergies. Did you know that?
No.
My mom has ragweed allergy. And she was like allergic to citrus fruits growing up, but she grew out of it, I think.
Really?
So anyway, like,
and shellfish for your,
oh yes, oh yeah, it's, my grandmother and my aunt have shellfish allergies, y'all, and I'm just like praying every day because my aunt didn't get it till she was older in age, and I'm like, oh my gosh, if one day I eat some delicious crawfish and start breaking out in hives, I'm gonna melt down. I love crawfish. Jessica, take it or leave it, but I love it. So she had rash all the time. And we would just put like cream on it, and we would just, you know, like we did the best we could. She had diaper rashes all the time. I did not understand, because when you Google about a diaper rash, people got a million, answers. So I did not understand back then that a consistent diaper rash is not just normal, because the way the internet made it feel is it was normal.
Yeah.
And we had, do you remember we had like a million different butt pastes?
Yeah.
And, you know, all the things.
And then at one point you started mixing them together.
Oh,
like,
yeah.
A concoction that was like multiple together, mixing this little like Tupperware dish to the side that I would have to. I'm like, which one do I use today?
All of them. Just all of them when in doubt, you know. And so that was another red flag to me. And so the crazy thing about it, looking back, is while this was going on, I was breastfeeding, and I was really stubborn. I was only going to breastfeed. She was only getting breast milk, even though we had thrushed 1 million times and I was exhausted. She never slept. I was only going to breastfeed, and I didn't really make like enough milk to just have an oversupply, for Jess to maybe feed a bottle and let me sleep in, you know, very often. And, So what they tell you when you are breastfeeding and you're trying to make more milk is to have oatmeal. Oatmeal helps with milk supply. So I was making homemade lactation cookies. Yeah. And back then we had a store. Remember that store up there? Oh, I wish she would come back for my sister's sake. Not my sake, but I'm done with the lactation life, but for my sister's sake, because it was just so easy. Or for like my mom friends who have had babies, it was such an easy gift and they were delicious. But I made lactation cookies and I bought lactation cookies. I ate oatmeal every morning for breakfast. I just was really on the oatmeal train. And I was having like granola bars with oatmeal in it. Like I was after some oatmeal. And so while I was consuming a crap ton of oatmeal every day, our child was showing signs of a rash every day. And like, I'm very conscious about how I'm presenting this, because I do not want this to be one more thing that moms stress about. Like every mom on the planet wants to diagnose their kid with a milk allergy just because they're fussy after they ate, or, you know, or every mom wants to beat themselves up because, you know, their kid is fussy and it must be from the milk. And like, y'all, babies just cry. You know what I mean? Babies just cry. And sometimes it's not an allergy. Most of the time it's not an allergy. So if you're a new mom or even a new grandmother, like, hear me, like most of the time it's just a baby being a baby. And again, when I was in hindsight, I see these things, but back then I was just like, well, I guess this is just what babies do.
Yeah.
I guess this is just what little pale babies that are belong to, you know, because the fairer the skin, the higher the likelihood of allergy issues, I think, is a correlation. And she had red hair, and I think that's a higher likelihood of allergies, I think. But y'all don't Google me.
Don't quote her.
But I just assumed, like, hey, this is what it is. She's got rash. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I think I'm also... You usually worry more than I do. I'm always worse about thinking things are just normal and things have always been this way, or, oh yeah, it'll be fine. It'll go away next week, or, you know, a couple days or whatever. I'm always a wait and see kind of person, and you're usually not. And no. So it's like you said, when it was the first baby, neither one of us knew what was going on.
And what did you say about that last night? I'm the Eve basically of Satan.
I didn't say that. So, I mean, you're misquoting
this book
me
he's
for
reading
sure.
It's talking about women and their need for control. Well, men and their role in the family, but then it outlines women.
Well, it just points out
and how they control the family, but how Eve is the reason that really happened. And
yeah, I mean, the mother
said,
of all.
I understand
you.
I understand you now. You need to be in control.
I think you're misquoting me now, but. I'll be okay with the hate mail I'm going to get from this. But no, you're usually more worried and more nervous about things.
I am
and
proactive.
So
I am very proactive, and you can tend to be reactive for
correct.
Most things that are not a true threat, which
correct.
I think is a quality I so wish I had. I mean, I so wish that was who I am.
Yeah, but you also... You used to anyway, you don't as much anymore, but you used to like Google everything. And so like things that were maybe, like you said, there's 1,000 different reasons why a baby can have a diaper rash. And there's all these different things that could be the problem. And so it's really hard to be worried about something whenever you don't know like that it's a deal, that it is a big deal. And then, like, what could be making it a big deal?
Right,
because
it really could just be a diaper rash.
Right, it could have been. And so, like, it was a very tricky time to be, right. What were we, 28?
8.
And, you know, have a six-month-old and not know what's going on.
Right.
So, I don't think anybody does with the first six-month-old.
Yes, Lord have mercy on my... I don't know, man. These books out here, I feel like people have a lot more resources these days. But anyway, they don't. We're just more seasoned.
Did you read books before we had one?
There was
the
one
first
book.
One.
Yeah. Not Moms on Call, because I loved Moms on Call, but there was the other one.
Yeah, we did
one.
That the second one.
Hang on, I'll look it up.
And by the second one, I mean Glory.
The second one, yeah, was Glory, and it was Baby Wise.
Baby
I read
Wise.
Baby Wise with
I
Sarah
do.
Mason,
yeah.
And I was like, there is no way I'm going to just... put my kid in there and let it cry.
Scream, yeah.
Like, and so I was like, screw these parenting books. We know what we're doing, you know. But so, okay, so fast forward. So we are, Sarah Mason is about 4 months old. All the things, right? We're sleep deprived, etc. And then, me being me, and the control freak just discussed.
You discussed that. I did not.
I was working full time, but because I was a dietitian, I really was... set on making homemade baby food. And I was, y'all, this is what, it's like, it is very emotional for me because I was so excited to feed our child. Do you remember that? I was just like, I could not wait to see her reaction to food. And all. I mean, I watched YouTube videos of babies responding to food. Food is my jam, you know? And I was excited about being able in my mind at the time, Lord, y'all, I did not know, but in my mind at the time, I was going to mold this child's palate to be that of one that only craves vegetables. You know, like I was going to create my own little...
Not a vegetarian, though.
Well, but you know, like my own little human who was like, Mommy, I'm craving some broccoli today. Will you steam me up some broccoli?
I'd rather have broccoli than Oreos, Mom, please.
Mom, why did you buy these cookies? You know, so I just, in my mind, I was just so excited for us to try food. So we started solids with her when she was about 4 months old, which With Glory, we did not do the same thing. I have learned a lot since then just about how a baby's gut really needs to be developed and really needs to be prepared for solids. And I don't believe Sarah Mason's was when we started. First of all, she was born a little bit early. And then secondly, she really wasn't sitting up well. Also, like you said, she weighed a lot. Like, she was not malnourished by any means. Like, you know, a lot of pediatricians will be like, okay, she's kind of underweight. Let's think about adding some solids in. Like, that was not the case for us.
Yeah.
I just wanted to. And so we started with like green beans, carrots, avocado. She, I think, hated avocado from the jump, and that really disappointed me. What else? No, I tried to steer away from the sweets, but I do think we may have done a banana at one point. Anyway.
Oh, yeah.
So there was one week in my work week when I was consumed, and I thought, okay, let's just try some grains. Let's just try. So I bought the baby oatmeal, and we had it. We fed it to her nights in a row. You know, we were following the instructions of like feeding her the same thing. You know, we were trying to make sure there was no IgE allergy, right? Like, that's all we were told about back then. And so we fed her this, you know, several nights in a row. And so looking back though, I cannot remember. I wish I could. Do you remember when the pink,
mm-hmm.
she got like pink, almost like rosacea on her cheeks that just stayed there?
Yep.
And that had not always been there. And I just, you know, I'm like, okay, was it after the oats? Because meanwhile, I'm still eating oatmeal and giving it through my breast milk. Anyway, so we did that, and then we moved on to the next food. She had oatmeal for several times in a row, you know? And one night, it was a busy night. I did not thaw out any of my homemade baby food or whatever we had going on, you know. Baby led weaning wasn't really like, I know all the moms these days, we did baby led weaning with Glory and it was fabulous, but that wasn't really a thing. Like, we weren't just like feeding Sarah Mason what we were eating yet. Or ever, really, until, bless her heart, she turned three. I mean, you know, like, poor thing. And so I said, Jess, grab that oatmeal out of the pantry and let's just do that for dinner. So he did. I remember you got it out, you fed her, and then we put her down. And then, I get the times confused. You remember the two different times?
Yeah.
Okay. Tell us what happened the first time.
Well, I mean, we usually put her down around 6 or mm-hmm. so. So, you know, it's not like it was time for bed for us either.
Right.
Like, we've traditionally, and I think we've talked about this before on the podcast, but our time together is usually after our kids go to bed. And so even then, tired parents, whatever, Netflix was somewhat new-ish to us and like all that. So we were watching shows or doing whatever, getting, you know, doing laundry, doing all the things after you put a baby down. And it was about 10 o'clock,
yeah.
9:30. And we just like, obviously we had like 17 baby monitors hooked up to her at this point, a breathing one, a heart one, one on her toe, a camera. So we had all those and, we heard something like there, you know, whenever you're used to hearing the same noises coming out of the baby's room, a cry, a whine, whatever. And you're very in tune to it whenever you've got a 4 or 5 month old, right? Because it's like, they're going to need me.
Or I you're
need
to, holding your breath. They're going
to wake up. Yeah, you don't want them to wake up.
Yeah.
So we heard something and you go in there and you could kind of hear like not gagging or whatever, yeah. But it was like a noise that sounded like she was like trying to throw up.
Yeah.
Right. And you went in there and then anytime you say my name, I'm like, all right, something's going on, something serious. And I just heard Jess or whatever. And I come in there and like,
anytime I say his name, cause I usually say like babe or
Yeah. So it's dude, but it's, so I know it was serious. So I come in there and like, you've already picked her up, but there's, you know, it's in her bed everywhere. And you're looking at me with like this confused look, like what's going on? And she just keeps.
Oh God, y'all, it was awful.
She just kept vomiting. It was like you.
It was a never ending flow.
Yeah, I was shocked.
You have a stomach bug. You get to check up. It's like you got it. There's like you got to get it out, and then you get a minute to breathe at least. You know, yeah. This was like.
It didn't stop.
It did not stop. And I mean, I remember wondering, like, how is she breathing?
Right. How is there more inside of her?
Right.
How is there anything inside of her? Because I'm thinking, I mean, it was a good 30 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
We got her in a bathtub. Like, we were trying to do, we tried anything we thought we could do to, like cool her down. We thought she had an upset stomach. We were, like, trying all the things. And she just kept doing it.
Yeah.
And then I remember...
I think that the one thing that's, now that we've had, like, now that they've actually, both the kids have had, like, stomach bugs and, like, actual just GI upset things, I think the solid difference was that it just never stopped.
It never stopped.
It just never stopped. Like, there was no break.
Yeah.
Like, it was insane.
Like, you're right. Like, when you're sick, you get sick, like, in spurts. Like, mm-hmm. it happens, and then you're like, oh, okay. I'm done for now.
I'm
going to
drink some water.
I can lay down. I can try to feel better for the next 30 minutes or whatever until it might happen again. It just kept going.
Yeah.
And that was like shocking to me.
Yeah.
But then, like you said, after we got her out of the bath, I think she kept getting sick.
Was it this time or the second time that she threw up till when she was throwing up bile? But then one time it was blood. And that was the first time.
Yeah. Because that's when, because at first we thought, oh, stomach bug, whatever. We don't have to go to the ER.
Yeah.
And it got to that point and we were like, we're going to the ER.
Yeah.
And I was always anti-ER. Like, I didn't think we needed to go to the ER every time something somewhat sketchy happened or whatever. I was like, it'll be fine. Like I mentioned earlier.
Yeah, like she fell off the bed one time.
It wasn't the bed. It
the
was
the couch.
And that's one
like,
of
we the, need to go to the
that's
ER.
One of the ones I'm talking about. I was in the shower all the way across the house. You're trying to get her dressed. She's on like literally like a 12 inches from the ground ottoman. It was so short and she just kind of rolled over and I think like onto a pillow or something.
God.
Like nothing serious.
His name across the house,
here I come
y'all.
Running across
he
the house
ran
soaking
sliding.
Wet.
I will never forget it. We had concrete floors in that house and he was soaking wet and butt naked sliding through the house on those floors because I screamed so loud she had just rolled off the ottoman.
I was coming to save the day.
Yes, and then he was severely annoyed.
I didn't take a normal shower for like a year after that. I was just nervous I was gonna get screamed at again.
Anyway, so
but yes. So yeah, so at that point I remember she was like I don't even know how to describe it, but like
really pale,
extremely pale,
almost
looked
like
a ghost.
I mean, it was wild,
and like could barely keep her eyes open.
Her head was limp.
Yeah,
on me. I mean,
And then, but she just like wouldn't move.
And
you know,
like so she threw up and threw up and threw up. Then she threw up bile, and I started getting scared. I'm like, Jess, this is bile. And then when the blood came. And so, but it was just a little bit, and like looking back, they said it was just irritation from her esophagus.
You're right.
But I mean, I'm like, oh my God, I'm not thinking that in that moment. So the blood came, but then after that, we kind of thought, cause I'm like, oh my gosh, once she gets through this bile, there's nothing left. And so we kind of thought she was going to snap,
but
I mean, by then she literally had lost everything in her body. And so we called my sister and it was late at night. I have an older sister who is in the healthcare field and she had toddlers at the time. And so she was like, yeah, because even if it is just a stomach bug, because she has thrown up so much and so long, you need to take her to the ER and make sure she's gets a drip.
Electrolytes or whatever.
So we went.
Yep.
We went to a small hospital closer to our home for this first round. And I mean, it was a quiet, easy experience. And that we walked in and they just said like, hey, you know, she looks like she has a stomach bug. And then the wildest thing happened. They gave her a drip, right?
I don't remember if it was a drip or, what did they give? like Pedialyte?
Yeah, well, so that's what I was going to say. But I thought she may have had a drip.
I don't remember the first time. I don't think she did the first time.
Okay, so her stomach, I mean, by that point, it had been about 2 hours.
Couple hours, yep.
And so they gave her some Pedialyte. Now, mind you, I had been trying to breastfeed her, and she refused. I even was trying to give her some water through a straw, just like anything, and she refused. But after she had had that gut rest, just a little while, and they brought in that Pedialyte, she chugged it. Do you remember that?
Like
sucked it down.
Yeah.
And I just remember us both looking at her like, what in the actual...
What have you done to us?
What, you know, because then... I mean, before we left, they let us go that night, only a few hours later.
Yeah.
And because they want, because she had the Pedialyte, they wanted to make sure she held it down. And then maybe some more Pedialyte, they want to make sure she held it down. And then they let us go. By the time we left, y'all, she was like climbing all over you, giggling, playing, like just like a normal baby.
Yep.
And when we left, I remember us both being like, do babies like bounce back from stomach bugs differently than adults? Because this is wild. Like, yeah. I took the day off. I took the day off of work the next day, expecting her to just lay around and just be real sickly. Oh my God, we played and we played and we played. And meanwhile, I'm like on 2 hours of sleep.
Right.
You know? And so that was it.
Yep.
Until the next time, which was that Valentine's Day?
Yes.
Valentine's Day. Y'all, we had a Valentine's Day at home. It wasn't a big deal, but it was Valentine's night. Again, at this point, we had not connected the dots to the oatmeal.
Mm-hmm.
But Valentine's night, we fed our oatmeal again. And I don't even remember I don't remember that evening. You know what I mean?
No, I don't either. I was supposed to be flying out of town the next day. Like the next morning.
We celebrated Valentine's early.
A day early.
Yeah.
Yep. I was supposed to fly on Valentine's Day for work. And so on the 13th, I don't remember exactly what we did, but again, we didn't even think it must have been the oatmeal the first time around because...
It was just, we thought it was a stomach bug. That's what they told us. I mean, we had no other reason not to.
That's right. Yeah, so if you're listening to this, you're probably like, well, dum-dums, you shouldn't fed her oatmeal.
No.
But we didn't, you know, like the way we built this up, you might think that. But like, there was nothing indicating that she had, you know, this crazy thing to oats at that point. And so, yeah, so we fed her Valentine's night or the day before Valentine's. And I mean, it was almost like, in my brain, it was like, a carbon copy of the first night, put her down.
It looks the same.
A couple hours later, I'm packing. We're you know, doing whatever after we put her down.
That time though, because I think after the first time, I had gotten into a habit, as if I wasn't already into this habit, but I had gotten into a habit of walking in there and checking on her every so often. And that time, remember, I walked in, she was still asleep.
That's right.
But there was vomit in the bed.
Yep.
And so then, of course, I like pulled her up and woke her up out of her sleep, and you know, and then it started all over again.
Same thing.
And so, yeah, the exact same thing. Like vomit until, in fact, I felt like that time was worse. They say each time it's a worse reaction, and I really do feel like that time was worse. And so, after that, I called my sister again. And she was like, okay, this time you need to go to the children's hospital.
Yep.
And so at that point, she and I both had been on Google and we both were like, you know what? It looks like this thing called FPIES. And so we got to Batson and same situation. Her gut rested for a minute. They gave her Pedialyte. She was snapping back. We saw several different doctors there that time. And they came in and they said it looked like FPIES, correct?
Do you remember I don't remember the lady's name, obviously, but, I was trying to remember if she was like a student. But you know, most of the time, whenever you walk into like an emergency situation or, the doctor in general, when you've Googled stuff, they're like, yeah, sure. They're kind of dismissive of it or like, yeah, sure. Google says everything. But for whatever reason, that lady, like, really listened to you.
Yeah.
You remember?
She saw my hysteria. She was scared.
Maybe.
She was scared otherwise.
Maybe, but she, I mean, it was like she, I think she's the one who ended up referring us.
I think she was a student. She was a, yeah. Or she was like an intern. She was.
Whatever you call after they've been there a while,
resident.
But they're
she
not.
She was a
yeah.
resident.
Yeah. Yeah. But anyway, so she was like, she listened very intently to you. Mm-hmm. And it was like, after kind of assessing everything and listening to all the facts, she was like, I kind of agree with you. It's very possible that it could be this.
Yes.
And I think she's the one who referred us to Dr. Rodriguez.
Mm-hmm.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But yeah, so then we were like, and that
I was right.
Yeah, but we were also like, what now? Like, what
yeah.
is this? What is
so it took us like a month, remember, to get into the allergy appointment. And
yep.
so by that point, Sarah Mason had solids, lots of them.
Right.
But I was like, we will not feed her a solid food until we get, you know, because I was scared to death. And then, of course, when she agreed with my diagnosis, then, of course, I go down this rabbit hole. Just reading everybody's freaking horror stories, which is my MO. I mean, I have really tried to be better about that. But back, honestly, since that time is when I started trying to be better about that, because I got down so many different rabbit holes about this illness that didn't turn out to be true, but they
right.
paralyzed me with fear.
Mm-hmm.
Over my infant, over my baby, you know? It's one thing if you think you're sick. It's a whole nother thing if you think something's wrong with your baby. And so I really, since then, I've tried to, like, not go down those rabbit holes as far. But this was many moons ago, and so it was really bad. We had a month
yeah.
in between, and I obsessed, and I freaked out, and we did not feed her a solid for that time.
Yeah, because weren't there, isn't it typical that with FPIs, there are other, I'm not medical healthcare mm-hmm. whatsoever, but mm-hmm. immune stuff? Like, aren't there usually things
yeah.
that correlate?
Well, there's all kinds of research out there. Or like, I don't even know if it's research or, I don't know. There's all kinds of light research out there about how it could be connected to genetic issues that could also, you know, have other issues going on, or, you know, you could have an esophageal issue as well. Or,
yeah.
I mean, there are people out there that FPIs is just a part of their overall diagnosis of health struggles.
Yeah.
And, you know, but so I, of course, went to the worst, you know, immediately.
So it wasn't just FPIs and, like, the unknown behind that you were, like, frantic about. It was about all the other potential things that it could potentially lead to.
Right.
Or be associated with if it were.
Right.
Indeed,
well, and
FPIs.
So the internet, like, really gives you this vague direction. It's like, you know, don't feed them the trigger food, and also any other foods, you know, watch out kind of thing. You know, like, it's so vague. And so
yeah.
I'm like, how, like, she is at an age now that she needs some food, some real food. They say feed your baby food or they're going to be malnourished by this point. And so I'm like, how am I going to feed her? How am I going to feed her? Literally, how am I going to feed her?
Yeah.
You know, was the question. I wanted a... Yeah, I mean, I'm a meal plan writer. I wanted a meal plan for my baby. Exactly. You know?
Did.
And so, in fact, I wrote her one. Remember that? I wrote
you
her
did.
One with all them banana powder, whatever. Okay, so we're going to... we're running on time. And so, I think let's get through the doctor's visit situation, Jess, and then we'll go to the next episode for next time. Okay, so we finally got to the doctor. The allergist. Yeah.
Yep.
So some mamas that I know have done the GI doctor and the allergist. I don't know why we never went to GI, but our allergist was wonderful. They sent us to him simply because he was like one of the only ones in the practice that knew much about FPIs. And even still, like we said earlier, it was not a whole lot, but he was more aware of the rising, you know, occurrence of
yep.
it. And so we went in and he talked through what it was, how it happens, how literally you cannot predict it. You don't know. Sometimes it's coupled with an I, like sometimes she'll have, you know, have FPIs with another IgE type allergy or some kind of GI issues, or like you just don't know. And so literally he was looking at us saying, I swear if he said it once, yes, he probably said it 100 times, 100 different ways to me, because I just kept wanting more information. But he's just like, we're just going to have to try and see.
Yeah.
We're just going to have to try and see. Trial and he was and like, error. Yeah, trial and error. And he was like, you can bring her up to, like, they had, remember, we could admit yep. her as a patient, and they could hook her up to IVs. Do you remember this? This was an option. Hook her up to IVs, had to hook her up to IVs ahead of time and trial a food.
Yep.
Because and then she just had to lay there for 2 hours or whatever and see if the reaction was going to happen or not. But she had to be hooked up to IVs ahead of time, because if they waited till after she was having the reaction, it was too late. Like, yep. the rehydration or whatever, it was too late. And I just remember thinking, I am not opting in to come up here
every day for lunch.
Right, and hold my baby down in this bed.
Yeah.
With these IVs for, you know, for precaution. Anyway, so he told us, go home, start trying foods. Try, this is what he said. Now, this kind of does not go with the internet research, but do you hear me? I did not care. I wanted a man to tell me exactly what to do. And so he said, go home, try one food, 10 to 14 days at a time. So the same food over and over again. Now, we could backtrack and label some foods as safe that she had already had, like the green beans and the avocado that she hated. Like, those things were already safe, yep. because we could try them again after she had had them for several times. We took some time off, try them again, and then they're considered safe if she doesn't get sick. So 10 to 14 days, try the same food. Then take a week off of that food, that one food that you've been eating all week long. And then, yeah, completely remove it and then add it back. And that's the trial day.
That's the test.
That's the trial day. And so then, you know, that's a safe. And so that's what we called it, a safe. And so you worked your way through every single food this way. And the kicker was, is that he looked at me and he looked at me, the full-time working mom with a very important job, a very important title. I had just been promoted, and said, you need to do this between the hours of 8 and 5, Monday through Friday. And I looked at him and I said, okay. I mean, what do I say? He said, because you want to be able to come back here if she has a reaction.
Yep.
Instead of having to go to the ER every single time. And because the clinic he was at was very close to our home.
Yep.
It would be a quick drive. It would be an ease. Like, they would be able to help her quicker.
Right.
Than, because each reaction, like I said, it can get worse and worse. And so he did not want to play around with that possibility, you know, the possibility of it being an even worse reaction and it being, you know, requiring a hospital stay, you know?
Yeah.
And so we went home and we figured it out. And so that was really the beginning of like a whole life change for the Shelby family.
That's right.
Like a whole entire life change. And so we are going to wrap this one up and come back next week and kind of talk a little bit more about that. We're going to talk about how we move forward, how the trials went, what life was like with our FPIs, and what happened after the doctor told me I need to feed her between 8 and 5.
That's right.
Okay, so we will see y'all next week. Thank you for listening to today's episode of Say Grace Podcast. If you enjoyed it, it would mean the world to me if you left me a 5-star review. Also, make sure to follow the show so you don't miss another episode. Plus, if you're interested in learning more about losing weight and eating the foods you love, make sure to subscribe to my email list by going to perfectfitnutrition.com. See ya!